The Christian in Complete Armor by William Grinnell, dated 1657. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 14b. Gird about with truth. Chapter 12. Four characters of truth of heart or sincerity. Having broke the flattering glasses wherein hypocrites used to look till they fall in love with their own painted faces and conceit themselves sincere, as also those who have disfigured the sweet countenance and natural beauty of the sincere soul, so as to make it bring the grace of God which shines on it into question. I now proceed to draw a few lineaments and lay down some undoubted characters of this truth of heart and godly sincerity, whereby we may have the better advantage of stating every one his own condition. Section 1. First, a sincere heart is a new heart. Hypocrisy is called the old leaven, 1 Corinthians 5:7. Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump. Dough once soured with leaven will never lose the taste of it, neither will corrupt nature cease to be hypocritical, till it cease to be corrupt nature. Either the heart must be made new, or it will have its old quality. There may be some art used to conceal it and take away its unsavoriness from others for a while, as flowers and perfume cast about a rotten carcass may do its scent. Yet both the rotten carcass and the corrupt heart remain the same. They say of the peacock that, roast him as much as you will, yet his flesh, when cold, will be raw again. Truly thus let a carnal heart do what it please, force upon itself never such a high strain of seeming piety, so that it appears fire hot with zeal. Yet stay a little, and it will come to its old complexion, and discover itself to be but what it was, naught and false. One heart and a new heart, both are covenant mercies, yet so promised that the new is promised in order to the making of the new, the heart, one. Ezekiel 11:9. I will give them one heart, and I will put a new spirit in you, and I will take away the stony heart, etc. God promises he will give them one spirit, that is, a sincere heart to God and man, contrary to a divided heart, a heart and a heart, the mark of hypocrisy. But how will he give it? He tells them, I will give you a new spirit. And how will he do that? I will take away the heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. Upon which words, one very well thus grosses, I will give you one heart, which that I may so do, I will cast it anew, and that I may do this also, I will melt and soften it, as one that having many pieces of old silver and plate lying by him, which he intends to put into one bowl, he first resolves to cast it anew, and to that end throws it into the fire to melt, and so at last shuts up all in one piece. Indeed, by nature, man's heart is a very divided, broken thing, scattered and parceled out, a piece to this creature and a piece to that lust, one while this vanity hires him, as Leah did Jacob of Rachel, anon when he hath done some drudgery for that, he lets himself to another, thus divided is man in his affections. Now the elect, whom God hath decreed to be vessels of honor, consecrated for his holy use and service, he turns in the fire of his word, that being there softened and melted, he may, by his transforming spirit, cast them anew, as it were, into a whole holy oneness, so that he who before was divided from God and lost among the creatures in his lust that shared him among them, now his heart is gathered into God from them all. It looks with a single eye on God and acts for him in all that he doth. If therefore thou wouldest know whether thy heart be sincere, inquire whether it be thus made new. Hath God thrown thee into his furnace? Did ever his word, like fire, take hold upon thee so as to soften thy hard heart and melt thy drossy spirit, that thou now seest that desperate hypocrisy, pride, unbelief, and the like, which before laid hid, like dross in the metal before the fire finds it out, and not only seeth it, but seeth it sever and separate from thy soul, that thou who before didst bless thyself as in a good condition, now bewaileth thy folly for it, heartily confessing what an unsavory creature thou wert to God in all thou didst. The things which appeared so gaudy and fair in thy eye, thy civil righteousness, keeping thy church, slumbering over a few duties in thy family, that for them thou thoughtest heaven was, as it were, in mortgage to thee, dost thou lament to think how thou didst mock God with these hypocritical pagans abroad, While thy lusts were entertained within doors, and in thy bosom, there sucking the heart blood of thy dearest affections, in a word, canst thou say that thou art not only melted into sorrow for these, but that thou findest thy heart, which was so divided and distracted between lusts and creatures, now united to fear the name of God? Hast thou but one design, that above all thou pursuest, and that to approve thyself to God, though with the displeasing of all beside, one love, how thou mayest love Christ and be beloved of him. If the streams of thy affections be thus, by the mighty power of God renewing thee, gathering into this one channel, and with a sweet violency run this way, then blessed art thou of the Lord. Thou art the sincere soul of his account, though much corruption be found in thee still, that is, folding thy stream and endeavoring to stop the free course of thy soul Godward. This may put thee to some trouble, as the mountains and rocks do the river water running to the sea, causing some windings and turnings in its course, which else would go the nearest way, even in a direct line to it. So thy remaining corruptions may now and then put thee out of the way of obedience, but sincerity will, like the water, on its journey for all this, and never leave till it bring thee, though with some compass, to thy God, whom thou hast so imprinted in thy heart, as he can never be forgot by thee. But if thou never hadst the hypocrisy of thy heart thus discovered, and made hateful to thee, nor a new principle put into thy bosom to turn the tide of thy soul contrary on the natural fall of thy affections, only thou, from the good opinion which thou hadst of thyself because of some petty flourishes thou makest in profession, taketh it for granted thou art sincere in thy heart true, and I dare pronounce thee an unclean hypocrite. The world may saint thee possibly, but thou wilt never, as thou art, be so in God's account. When thou hast tickled and spruced up thyself never so finely into the fashion of a Christian, still thou wilt have but a saint's face and a hypocrite's heart. It is no matter what is the sign, though an angel that hangs without, if the devil and sin dwell within. New trimmings upon an old garment will not make it new, only give it a new shape, and truly it is no good husbandry to bestow a good deal of cost in finding up an old suit that will drop in a while to tatters and rags, when a little more might purchase a new one that is lasting. And is it not better to labor to get a new heart, and all that thou doest may be accepted and thou saved, than to lose all the pains thou takest in religion and thyself also for want of it? Section 2. Secondly, a sincere heart is a plain heart, a simple heart, a heart without foils. The hypocrite is of the serpent's brood. He can, as a serpent, shrink up or let himself out for his advantage, unwilling to expose himself much to the knowledge of others, and he has reason to do so, for he knows he hath most credit where he is least known. The hypocrite is one that digs deep to hide his counsel. Isaiah chapter 29, verse 15. Their heart is deep. Psalms chapter 64, verse 6. Their meaning and intent of heart lies nobody knows how far distance from their words. A sincere heart is like a clear stream in a brook. You may see to the bottom of his plots and his words, and take the measure of his heart by his tongue. I have heard said that diseases of the heart are seen in spots of the tongue. But the hypocrite can show a clear tongue and yet have a foul heart. He that made that proverb, "Speak that I may see you," did not think of the hypocrite who will speak, that you shall not see him. The thickest clouds that he hath to wrap up his villainy in are his religious tongue and sandy profession. Wouldest thou know whether thou hast a true heart in thy bosom? Look if thou hast a plain-dealing heart. See them joined. 2 Corinthians 1:12. Paul and the rest of his faithful messengers of Christ had their conversation among the Corinthians in the simplicity and godly sincerity. They had no closed box in the cabinet of their hearts in which they cunningly kept anything concealed from them of their designs, as the false apostles did. Now this plain dealing of a sincere heart appears in these three particulars. First, a sincere heart deals plainly with itself, and that in two things chiefly. First, in searching and ransacking its own self, this is doth it to its most skillful and utmost skill and power. It will not be put off with pretenses or such a mannerly excuse as Rachel gave to Laban, when at the same time she sat brooding on his idols. No, an account it will have of the soul, and that such a one as may enable it to give a good account to God, upon whose warrant it does its office. Oh, the fear which such a one shrewds lest any lust should escape its eye, and lay hid as saw in the stuff, or that any the least grace of God should be trodden on regardlessly by belying or denying it. When David found his thoughts of God, when used to recreate him and be in his most pleasing company, occasioned some trouble in his spirit. Psalms chapter 79, verse 3. I thought on God, and he was troubled, this holy man, wondering what the matter should be, do but see what a privy search he makes. He hunts backwards and forwards what God's former dealings had been, and communes with his heart and makes diligent search there. Verse 6. Never gives over till he brings it to an issue, and finding the disturber of his peace to be in himself, he is not so tender of his reputation as to think of smoothing the business or smoothing it over, but attaches the thief, indicts his sin, and confesses the fact of the justifying God, whom before he had hard thoughts of. Verse 20. And I said, this is my infirmity, as if he had said, Lord, now I see that Jonah that caused the storm in my bosom and made me so uncomfortable in my affliction all this while, it is this unbelief of mine that bowed me down to attend so to the sorrow and sense of my present affliction, that it would not suffer me to look up to former experiences. And so while I forgot them, I thought unworthily of thee. Here was an honest, plain-dealing soul indeed. What akin art thou, O man, to holy David? Is this thy way in searching of thy soul? Dost thou do it in earnest, as if thou wert searching for a murderer hid in thy house, as willing to find out thy sin as ever a Papist in Queen Mary's time was to find Protestants, whom to discover they would run their swords and forks into beds and haymows, lest they should be there? Or, when thou goest about thy work, art thou loath to look too far, lest thou shouldest see what thou wouldest willingly overlook? Or afraid to stay too long, lest conscience should make an unpleasing report of thee. Tertullian, T-E-R-T-U-L-L-I-A-N, said of the heathen persecutors, they would not let the Christians be heard, because they could not then easily have had the face to condemn them. Their cause would have appeared so just, the contrary here is true. The hypocrite dares not put his state upon a fair trial, because then he could not handsomely escape condemning himself. But the sincere soul is so zealous to know its true state, that when he hath done his utmost himself to find it out, and upon this privy search his conscience clears him, yet he contends not himself here, but jealously self-love might blind his eyes and occasion too favorable report from his conscience. He calls in help from heaven and puts himself upon God's review. Psalms 139, verse 21. Do not I hate them that hate thee, and am I not grieved with those that rise up against thee? Verse 22. His own conscience answers to it. I hate them with a perfect hatred. I count them mine enemies. Yet David, not wholly satisfied with his own single testimony, calls out to God. Verse 23. Search me, O God, and know my heart. See if there be any wicked way in me. And wise physicians will not trust their own judgments about the state of their own health, nor sincere Christians themselves about their soul's welfare. It is God that they attend to. His judgment alone concludes and determines them. When they have prayed and opened their case to him, with David they listen what he will say. Therefore you shall find them putting themselves into the most searching ministry, from which they never come more pleased than when their consciences are stripped naked and their hearts exposed to the view, as the woman of Samaria who commended the sermon and Christ that preached it for this unto her neighbors, that he had told her all that ever she had done. John 4:29. Whereas a false heart likes not to hear of that. He thinks the preacher condemns the trespass when he comes upon his ground and comes up close to his conscience, and if he could, he would have an action against him for it. This struck in Herod's stomach, when John should lay his finger on a sore place, though he feared him, being conscious, yet he never loved him, and therefore was soon persuaded to cut off his head, which had so bold a tongue in it that durst reprove his incestuous bed. Secondly, the true heart shows its plain dealing with itself, as in searching, so in judging itself. When one's testimony comes in clear against it, and conscience tells, soul, in this duty thou betrayest pride, in that affliction, forwardness, and impatiency. Such a one is not long before it proceeds to judgment, and this is done death with so much vehemency and severity that it plainly appears zeal for God, whom he hath dishonored, makes him forget all self-pity. He lays about him in humbling and abasing himself as the sons of Levi, and executing justice on their brethren, who knew neither brother nor sister in that act. Truly such a heroic act is this of the sincere soul judging itself. He is so transported and clothed with a holy fury against his sin that he is deaf to the cry of flesh and blood, which would move him to think of a more favorable sentence. I have sinned, said David, against the Lord. 2 Samuel chapter 12. In another place, I have greatly sinned and done very foolishly. 2 Samuel 24. In a third, he, as an unworthy of a man's name, takes beast to himself. So foolish was I, ignorant as a beast before thee. Psalms 73:22. But a false heart, if conscience checks him for this or that, he perceives by this inward murmur in his bosom which way the cause will go if he proceeds fairly on to put himself upon the trial. The court is sure to be broke up and all put off to another hearing, which is like to be at leisure, so that as witnesses with delays and many put-offs grow at least weary of the work and will rather stay at home than make their appearance to little purpose, so conscience ceases to give evidence where it cannot be heard, or when heard can have no judgment against the offender. Secondly, a true heart is plain as with itself, so with God also. Several ways this might appear. Take one for all, and that is in his petitions and requests at the throne of grace. The hypocrite in prayer juggles. He asks what he would not thank God to give him. There is a mystery of iniquity in his praying against iniquity. Now this will appear in these two particulars, whether we be plain-hearted in our request or not. First, observe whether thou art deeply afflicted in spirit when thy request is not answered, or regardest not what success it hath. Suppose it be a sin thou prayest against, or some grace thou prayest for. What is thy temper all the while thy messenger stays, especially if it be long? Thou prayest, and corruption abideth not, grace grows not. Now thy hypocrisy or sincerity will appear. If sincere, every moment will be an hour, every hour a day, a year, till thou hearest some news from heaven. Hope deferred will make the heart sick. Dost not the sick man that sends for a physician think long for his coming? Oh, he is afraid his messenger should miss of him, or that he will not come with him, or that he shall die before he brings his physician. A thousand fears disturb him and make him passionately wish he were there. Thus the sincere soul passes those hours with a sad heart that it lives without a return of its request. I am a woman, saith Hannah to Eli, of a sorrowful spirit, 1 Samuel 1:15. And why so? Alas, she had from year to year prayed to God, and no answer was yet come. Thus saith the soul, I am one of a bitter spirit. I have prayed for a soft heart and a believing heart many a day and a month, but it has not come. I am afraid I was not sincere in the business. Could my request so long have hung in the clouds else? Such a soul is full of fears and troubles, like a merchant that hath a rich ship at sea, who cannot sleep on land till he sees her or hears of her. But if, when thou hast sent up thy prayer, thou canst cast off the care and thoughts of the business, as if praying were only like children scribbling over pieces of paper, which when they have done, they lay aside and think no more of them. If thou canst take denials at God's hand for such things as these, and blank no more than a cold suitor doth when he hears not from her whom he never really loved, it breaks not thy rest and bitters not thy joy. A false heart set thee on work. And take heed that instead of answering thy prayer, God doth not answer the secret desire of thy heart, which should he do, thou art undone forever. Secondly, observe whether thou usest the means to obtain that which thou prayest God to give. A false heart sits still itself while it sets God on work, like him that when his cart was set in the slough cried, Juniper, help, but would not put his own shoulder to the wheel. If corruptions may be mortified and killed for him, as Goliath was for the Israelites, he likes them looking on and not put to strike stroke, so it is, but for any encounter with them, or putting himself into the trouble of using any means for obtaining the victory, he is so eaten up with the sloth and cowardice that it is as grievous, he thinks, as to sit still in slavery and bondage to them. But a sincere soul is conscientiously laborious, Let us lift up our hearts with our hands unto the Lord. Lamentations 3:41. That is, saith Bernard, let us pray and use the endeavor the hypocrite's tongues wag, but the sincere soul's feet walk and the hands work. Thirdly, the sincere soul discovers its plainness and simplicity to men. We had our conversation among you, saith Paul to the Corinthians, in simplicity, in godly sincerity, not in fleshly wisdom. The Christian is one that cannot subject his heart to his head, his conscience to his policy. He commits himself to God in well-doing, and fears not others, if he be not conscious to himself, and therefore he dares not make a hole in his conscience to keep his skin whole, but freely and openly vouches God without disassembling his profession. While the hypocrite shifts his sails and puts forth such colors as his policy and worldly interests advises, if the coast be clear and no danger at hand, he will appear as religious as any, but no sooner he makes discovery of any hazard it may put him to, but he tears about and shapes another course, making no bones of juggling with God and man. He counts at his right hand, which leads to his temporal safety, but quite contrary, the upright, Proverbs chapter 16, verse 17, the highway of the upright is to depart from evil. This is the road that this true traveler jogs on in, and if he be at any time seen out of it, it is upon no other account than a man that hath unwillingly lost his way, never quite till he strikes into it again. Section 3. Thirdly, the sincere, true-hearted Christian is uniform. As truth in the doctrine differs in this from its opposite, that it is one error diverse, there is no harmony among errors as among truths. So truth of the heart or sincerity is known from hypocrisy by the same character. Indeed, truth in the heart is but the copy and transcript of another. They agree, as the face in the glass doth with the face in the man that looks in it, or as the image in the wax with the sculpture and the seal from which it is derived. Therefore, if truth in the word be uniform and harmonious, then truth in the heart, which is nothing but the impression of that there, must also be so. A sincere Christian, in the tenure of his course, is like himself, of one color, not like your changeable stuffs, so woven that you may, by turning them diverse ways, see diverse colors. There is a threefold uniformity in the sincere Christian's obediency. He is uniform as to the object, subject, and several circumstances that accompany his obediency. First, as to the object, the hypocrite indeed is in with one duty and out with another. Like a globus body, he touches the law of God at one point, some particular command he seems zealous for, but meets not in the rest, whereas a sincere heart lies close to the whole law of God in his desire and endeavor. The upright man's foot is said to stand in an even place, Psalms 26, verse 11. He walks not haughtily and uncomely as those who go in unequal ways, which are hobbling and up and down, or those whose feet and legs are not even, as Solomon saith. The legs of the lame are not even, and so cannot stand in an even place, because one is long and the other short. The sincere man's feet are even and his legs of a length, as I may say, his care alike, conscientious to the whole will of God. The hypocrite, like the badger, hath one foot shorter than another, or like a foundering horse, he doth not stand, as we say, right in all four. One foot at least, you shall perceive, he favors, loath to put it down. The Pharisees pretend much zeal for the first table. They prayed and fast in an extraordinary manner, but they prayed for their prey, and when they had fasted all day, they supped at the poor widow's cost. Her house they means to devour. A sad fast that ends in oppression and only serves to get them a ravenous appetite to swallow others' estates under a pretense of devotion. The moralist is very punctual in his dealings with men, but very thievish in his carriage to God. Though he may not wrong his neighbor of a farthing, he sticks not to rob God of greater matters. His love, fear, faith are due debts to God, but he makes no conscience of paying them. It is ordinary in Scripture to describe as saying a godly person by a particular duty, a single grace. Sometimes his character is one that feareth an oath, Ecclesiastes 9:2. Sometimes one that loves the brother in 1 John 3:14, and so of the rest. And why? But because wherever one duty is conscientiously performed, the heart stands ready for another. As God hath enacted all his commands with the same authority, wherefore it is said, God spake all these words, Exodus 21, one as well as the other. So God infuses all grace together and writes not one particular law in the heart of his children, but the whole law, which is a universal principle, inclining the soul impartially to all. So that if thou likest not all, thou art sincere in none. Secondly, the sincere Christian is uniform. The whole man, so far as renewed, moves one way. All the powers and faculties of the soul join the forces and have a sweet accord together. When the understanding makes discovery of the truth, then conscience improves her utmost authority on the will, commanding it in the name of God, whose officer it is to entertain it. The will, as soon as conscience knocks, opens herself and lets it in. The affections, like dutiful handmaids, seeing it a guest welcome to the will of their mistress, express their readiness to wait on it as becomes them in their places. But in them the hypocrite is not so. Their one faculty fights against another. Never are they all found to conspire and meet in friendly vote. When there is light in the understanding, the man knows this truth and that duty. Then often conscience is bribed for executing its office. It does not so much check him for the neglect of it. Truth stands, as it were, before the soul, and conscience will not so much befriend it as to knock and rouse up the soul to let it in. If conscience be overcome to plead its cause and shows some activity in pressing for entertainment, it is sure either to have a churlish denial with a frown for its pains in being so busy to bring such an unwelcome guest with it, as a forward wife doth by her husband when he brings home with him one she does not like, or else a fend entertainment, the more subtilely to hide the secret enmity it hath against it. Third, the sincere soul is uniform as to the circumstances of his obediency and holy walking, such as are times, place, and company and manner. He is uniform as to time. His religion is not like a holiday suit put on only at set times, but come to him when you will, you shall find him clad alike, holy on the Lord's day, and holy on the weekday too. Psalms 106, verse 3. Blessed are they that keep judgment, and he that doeth righteousness at all times. It is a sign, it is not a man's complexion, when the color he hath, while he sits by a fire, dies away soon after. There are some, if you would see their goodness and be acquainted with their godliness, you must hide the right time, or else you will find none, like some flowers that are seen but some months in the year, or like some physicians that they call for noon men. They would speak with them to any purpose, must come in the morning, because commonly they are drunk in the afternoon. Thus, maybe in the morning you may take the hypocrite on his knees in a saint's posture, but when that fit is over, you will see little of God in all his course, till night brings him again, of course, to the like duty. The watch is naught that goes only at first, winding up, and stands at the day after, and so is that heart, sure that desires not always to keep in spiritual motion. I confess there may be a great difference in the standing of the two watches, one from the very watch itself, because it hath not the right meg. This will ever do so till altered. Another possibly is true work. Only some dust clogs the wheels, or a fall hath a little battered it, which removed it will go well. And there is as great difference between the sincere soul and hypocrite in this case. The sincere soul may be interrupted in its spiritual motion and Christian course, but it is from some temptation that at present clogs him. But he hath a new nature which inclines to a constant motion and holiness, and doth, upon removing the present impediment, return to its natural exercise of godliness. But the hypocrite fails in the very constitution and frame of his spirit. He hath not a principle of grace in him to keep him moving. Again, the sincere Christian is uniform as to the place and company. Wherever he goes, he carries his rule with him, which squares him within doors amidst his nearest relations. David's resolve is his. Psalms 101, verse 2. He will walk within his house with a perfect heart. Follow him abroad, and he carries his conscience with him. It doth not bid it, as Abraham, a servant, when ascending the mount, to stay behind till he comes back. The Romans had a law that every one should, wherever he went, wear a badge of his trade in his hat or outward vestment, that he might be known. The sincere Christian never willingly lays aside the badge of his holy profession. No place nor company turns him out of the way that it is called holy. Indeed, his conscience does not make him forego his prudency. He knows how to distinguish place and place, company and company, and therefore, when cast among boisterous sinners and scornful ones, he doth not betray religion to scorn by throwing its pearls before such as would trample on them and rend them. Yet he is very careful lest his prudency should put his uprightness to any hazard. I will behave myself wisely, saith David, in the forenamed psalm, in a perfect way, that is, I will show myself as wise as I can, so as I may also be upright. Truly, this place and company is like the torrid zone, uninhabitable to a gracious soul, where profaneness is so hot that sincerity cannot look out and show itself by seasonable counsel and proof with safety to the saint. Therefore, they that have neither so much zeal to protest against the sins of such, nor so much care of themselves as to withdraw from thence, where they can only receive evil and do no good, have just cause to call their sincerity into question. Section 4. Fourthly, the sincere Christian is progressive, never at his journey's end until he gets to heaven. This keeps him always in motion, advancing in his desires and endeavors forward. He is thankful for a little grace, but not content with great measures of grace. When I awake, saith David, I shall be satisfied with thy likeness. Psalms chapter 17, verse 15. He had many a sweet entertainment of the house of God and his ordinances. The Spirit of God was the messenger that brought him many a covered dish from God's table, inward consolations in the world knew not of. Yet David has not enough. It is heaven alone that can give him his full draught. They say that Gauls, when they first tasted the wines of Italy, were so taken with their lustrous and sweetness that they could not be content to tray thither for this wine, but resolved they would conquer the land where they grew. Thus the sincere soul thinks it not enough to receive a little now and then of grace and comfort from heaven by trading and holding commerce at a distance with God in his ordinances here below, but projects and mediates a conquest of that holy land and blessed place from which such rich commodities come, that he may drink the wine of that kingdom in that kingdom. This raises the soul to high, noble enterprises, how it may attain to further degrees of grace every day than other, and so climb nearer and nearer heaven. He that aims at the sky shoots higher than he that means only to hit a tree. I press, saith Paul, towards the mark, that the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Philippians 3:14. Others admire Paul's attainment. Oh, that they had Paul's grace, and then they should be happy. But he who would count himself very unhappy if he might have no more, he professes he hath not apprehended what he runs for. The prize stands not in the midway, but at the end of the race, and therefore he puts on with full speed, yea, makes it the trial of a brightness in all. Verse 15. Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, that is, sincere, be thus minded. It is the hypocrite that stints himself in the things of God. A little knowledge he would have that may help him in discourse of religion among the religious, and for more, he leaves it as more fitting for the preacher himself. Some outward formalities he likes and makes use of in his profession as a tendency on public ordinances and sins which would make him stink among his neighbors he forbears. But as for pressing into more inward and nearer communion with God and ordinances, laboring to get his heart more spiritual, the whole body of sin more and more mortified, this was never his design. Like some slight-sighted tradesman that never durst look so high as to think of being rich, but thinks it well enough if he can but hold his shop doors open and keeps himself out of jail, though with 1,000 shifting tricks. End of chapter 12, having been read by Peter John Parisius.